What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 146. All right, before I tell you a little bit about the episode today, I want to first off make sure, especially if you're brand new, maybe you're brand new, this is the first time you've ever heard the podcast, we are getting ready to start on August 1st, the Primal Reset, the first ever group. It is a pilot group, which means I am going through it with you. We have a private Facebook group set up to be able to hold each other accountable. If you're not sure what the Primal Reset is, all you have to do is go back one episode and I lay it all out, break it all down. Not only what we'll be doing during the Primal Reset, the 90-day period, but also why it's structured the way it is, why it's built out, because there's going to be different factors. It's going to be around your health. It's going to be around your mental clarity. It's going to be around your legacy, doing something bigger than yourself. It may seem like a lot, but it's super, super simple. Not saying it's going to be easy, but it is super simple. So make sure all you have to do again is go to primalking.com. Put in your name and your email address. We will email you the link to be able to get into the Facebook group. We'll be able to hold each other accountable. The group is already growing day after day after day since we started it a week ago. So I'm very excited to see how many people we can get in there, but more importantly, how many lives we can truly change by us doing this together, doing it as a community, doing it the way that I feel like we were meant to live, which is, you know, supporting one another and doing the best that we can to hold each other accountable to live better lives than what we maybe currently are. I know for me, I'm a little bit scared about some of these things, not gonna lie. I really am, but I know I'm gonna have an awesome group of people there that's gonna be supporting me and holding me accountable, just as I plan on doing with each and every one of you who sign up for it as well. So again, right now, if you're thinking about it, if you're on the fence, that means you need to do it, right? Because if you're on the fence, that means there's something inside of you that's telling you maybe you need a little bit of a change, maybe you need accountability, maybe you need structure, right? If that is you, go to primalking.com right now, sign up, super simple, hop in the Facebook group, let's have a good time. Let's make some changes. Let's build some better habits. And at the end of the day, let's have some fun. All right. So when it comes to today's episode, this guy's just an awesome person. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Sometimes you meet people in life and you just connect because you know that they're a great person. And that's the way it was with Corey. We had the chance to spend several days in the Montana wilderness. You know, he was teaching us primitive skills, being able to shoot a longbow with him. He's just such a fascinating person, such a good dude. I don't really know how else to put it. And so I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation as much as what I enjoyed having it. And just listen. Listen to the psychology behind primitive skills, right? Like, this is up our alley. Primitive skills, mindset, all of that stuff is covered in this episode. So I really hope you love it. All right, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. You all have no idea how excited I am for my guest today. This is someone who grew up in very rural Nebraska, where he was raised to hunt, fish, forage for wild foods, and navigate the wilderness. From there, he joined the Marines. He served two combat tours in Afghanistan and served our country honorably. After building bows as a hobby for 6 years, he took it to the next level by starting Organic Archery, where he builds some of the most amazing primitive bows that you can find. He also leads workshops throughout the year that allows people to build their very own bow with their own hands. You may have also seen him on season 7 of the hit TV show Alone, where I know he would have crushed it if not for an unfortunate knee injury that sent him home early. I want to introduce you to one of the most genuine, just good dudes that I've had the pleasure to meet in a very long time, Mr. Corey Hawk. Thanks again, Corey, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Derek. It's good to see you again, brother, and appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, for sure. So you do all this cool primitive stuff. Obviously, we had the opportunity to meet here a couple of weeks back through our friend Kerry Jack at his Epic Wilderness Mastermind. I know it's the title's longer than that, but I forget all of the words. But anyways, I know you got into kind of primitive living and everything else, but if you wouldn't mind, just to start with, like, as a kid growing up, because it sounds kind of similar to me, like living super rural here in Idaho, like, what was that like? Did you guys go out? Did you kind of instantly fall in love with that stuff? Was it ingrained? Was it just in your nature? Like, yeah, how did you kind of start going down this path?
It was pretty much ingrained. I come from a family of bow hunters and rifle hunters and avid outdoorsmen, just a bunch of men and women that love to fish and hunt and camp. So it was pretty much just instilled in us at a very early age. And then when I was much, much younger, every family vacation I can ever remember was us just loading up all the campers, taking big family convoys out west to hunt in the mountains, whether that was, you know, deer, turkeys, antelope, whatever. So bow hunting was always around. And my parents had a bow and arrow in my hands as early as I could understand how to use one. And it was just sort of always around.
That's awesome. So I remember growing up, and it's kind of embarrassing now because I've gotten way softer, but were you one of those kids that just like killed anything that moved? Cause I was, like, in all honesty, like squirrels, birds, like whatever was moving, like I was probably shooting at it, trying to hit it with a rock or something. Like, was that you as well when you grew up?
Yeah. I think every young boy who grows up in a rural setting goes through a phase where he's sort of experimenting with mortality, you know, blowing up bullfrogs with fireworks and just shooting squirrels with slingshots and stuff like that. But we definitely had some rules, you know, our parents educated us on which birds were totally off limits. But as far as, you know, sparrows and bullfrogs and stuff like that, we definitely tested our marksmanship skills on those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Cause even now with my son, I'm always like, dude, you can't just go shoot everything. But for me, it was a different time, you know, like 30 years ago, 35 years ago when I was a young kid, like, I don't think people were maybe as sensitive to some of those things, and rightfully so. We've gotten a little bit, maybe more, a little more enlightened on life and everything else. But yeah, I was like, when you were talking about going out there, I was like, yeah, I was definitely that kid running around, just hitting every animal I could with, whether it was a BB gun or maybe a 22 when I got a little bit older, or rocks or slingshots. So that's so cool. So, I mean, for me, I guess I would say I kind of graduated from that into obviously hunting, doing a lot of rifle hunting. Did you do much rifle hunting growing up, or did you kind of stay more on the bow side of things?
We learned with the rifle, just as far as, you know, learning proper ethics and getting the animals down on the ground so that we could learn processing and stuff like that. But my early years were definitely with a rifle. Mm-hmm. Bow hunting was kind of mixed in there, but I didn't get really serious about bow hunting until after I got back from the military. It was kind of 50-50 growing up though.
Yep. Yep. I got into bows much, much later, and we'll get into some of the cool stuff that you're doing with bows, and obviously encouraging everybody to have you build one for them, because everybody needs one of your bows. I will tell you that after shooting one, I'm hooked. But so you got older, and then like career paths, right? Like, I don't think there's probably a ton of people that are like, you know what I want to do? I want to go like down the primitive survival route. I want to build bows and do stuff like that. Obviously you went into the Marines. Did you have any idea kind of that this was going to be a life path for you, or was it just a passion that it was like, hey, I'll kind of do this on the side, or did you actually maybe know that this could be a way of life for you down the road?
I really never expected it to become a way of life. I never pursued it as, you know, a full-time career. It was really just me after the military sort of jumping around between professions. I did a variety of different things, but I was always sort of...
Did you do some modeling? Did you do some modeling? You got to get that out there.
I did a little bit of work for...
I mean, you're a good looking guy, right? Like, you don't got the stupid mustache like me. Like, I could see you being a model.
I just shaved the stash off.
I noticed that, man. You don't have your mustache comb or anything.
Right. I did a little bit of work with just some workwear and outdoor companies, clothing. It was nothing like crazy. No underwear modeling or anything. Just jackets and work pants and stuff like that.
Nice.
But I kind of forget where we were there. What was the original
just
question?
Just on the path. Yeah, sorry. I kind of curveball.
A variety of different careers throughout my 20s. But I always had sort of a moonlight passion of primitive archery and bow making and shooting and stuff like that. So really what happened was I bounced around between a few different professions, and I enjoyed my time in each one. But during the evenings, I would come home every night and work on bows and arrows. It started with arrows, kind of learning the craft. And then after a very short period of time, learning how to make arrows or shooting these homemade arrows out of store-bought bows, I thought that kind of felt weird. So I figured I would learn how to make my own bows. So I dove really deep into the bow making world about close to 10 years ago now. Just bought every book, watched every YouTube video I could possibly find, and really immersed myself in the craft. And I was sort of moonlighting that. I would work a full-time job and I would come home and work on my passions and, you know, go through the hunting seasons and things like that. Take my time off for hunting or whatever. And then my friends and family convinced me to get on the internet because I wasn't really using social media or anything at that time. And they're like, oh, this is a pretty cool bows you're making. You should probably post them online. And I really didn't think anything of it. Made an Instagram a while back, just a handful of years ago. And within a pretty short period of time of having my work online, a couple of the bigger names in the survival community kind of, I don't know, just found me and told me they liked my work and asked if I could send them bows. So a few of those guys purchased bows. And from there, the traction just really picked up and it kind of blew up. And within about 2 years of being on the internet, I was really getting burned out from working full-time jobs and coming home and working on bows all through the night. So after about 2 years of that, I had to make a decision to either quit my job or quit building bows. So took the risk, quit my job and started Organic Archery in 2018.
That's so cool. And I think that so many people I know that they listen to the podcast, they're like, you know, I have a passion, but I'm playing it safe. You know, I've got my job, I've got my 401k. Like, what was that process like for you to make the transition of being like, okay, I'm going to step away from maybe the guaranteed income of the job? And obviously whenever you start a business, I know even for us with our meat business and everything else that I've ever done, man, it's hard because it's like, can I really like do something and get paid for it that I like to do? You know, I've always kind of been told you're supposed to hate your job. You're not supposed to like what you do. That's just what we do. Like, what was it for you that maybe kind of, I don't know, could help somebody if they are in that pivot point like you were? Like, what was the mindset you were kind of thinking as you made that transition?
For me, it was really about creating a plan, because I don't believe that you should just say you have, I mean, my circumstances are probably different than a lot of other people's, but let's say you have maybe some debt, maybe you have a mortgage, maybe you have some car loans, whatever you may have. It's not wise of you to step away from a full-time career and a stable income and just go all in on a business. Especially if you're in my situation where you're trying to make a very small one person craft kind of your profession. So I always tell people that the strategy that I used was to just put in the work. I would go to work full time, dedicate several hours every night, sometimes arguably too much time every night to the point where I would get burned out, but just come home from your regular job and put some hours, even just 1 hour a day, into your chosen passion and wait until that thing starts to generate a little bit of income. Really, I had cold feet because I had, you know, a great paying job and they get you hooked on the paychecks and they get you hooked on the stability. So it was a huge leap of faith for me to dive in, but I definitely worked double time to kind of make sure that it almost replaced my full-time income, at least enough to where I knew if I stepped away, I could make some lifestyle changes for those first couple of years and kind of pull back on spending, pull back on, you know, just everything, get all my debt paid off, which was huge for me. I'm a huge advocate for debt-free living. That really opened up the door for me to require less overhead for me to follow my dreams.
Yeah. Well, I think that's such an important point. And it's something that I've talked a little bit on the podcast before, is that you get so many of these kind of self-help gurus that are like, you've got to burn the boats. You've got to just go all in or else you won't be successful. And I think that, you know, there's certain points of going all in that I understand, but a guy like me, when we started up, you know, Crosso Meats, it's like, I have a wife, I have four kids. It's really easy for some dude on a stage to be like, go all in and burn your boats when he's not having a wife and kids to provide for, right? Like, yeah, if it works, it's great. It's a great success story. But if it doesn't work, you've jeopardized your responsibility, in my opinion, as a man, because you're here, I believe, again, I know this is kind of old school, right? But to provide for your family. And so that was kind of how we did, like with Crosso Meats, is it was literally kind of doing my normal consulting, marketing stuff, in addition to Crosso Meats. And I still do some of that stuff, right? But it was like, we kind of had to grow these side by side and work a little extra. And we knew that, which is why it was so important for us to make sure our kids were involved with our business, is because we didn't want to have to choose working all these hours, sacrificing time with our kids. We wanted them to be a part of it so we could kind of do it together. But, you know, it's kind of cool to see how as our meat business has grown, like I've been able to kind of scale down a little bit on the other stuff and kind of see it overtake it. So it makes a whole lot of sense to me. And I think that's so smart, like just from an advice standpoint to do that. So thank you for that. Next thing is like when it comes to like primitive skills, survival skills, why do you think that's important? I mean, right now, like everything's easy. We've got easy food. We've got easy, you know, electricity, all this stuff. Like, why do you think it is important for us to still kind of have that connection to some of those primitive skills?
I just think it empowers people to feel a little bit more self-reliant. I mean, it really disheartens me when I see people who would have no idea what to do if the electricity went off or if the water shut off. Like, just, it doesn't have to be a thing where people, you know, dedicate their entire lives to it and they can, you know, start friction fires and, you know, live out in the woods in buckskin clothing. That's a very extremist sort of end of the spectrum. And it has its values, but not everyone's going to have enough time to dedicate to that. But I think it's just so important for people to have basic knowledge, at least enough knowledge to like get you home safe to your family, maybe to, you know, get out of a city if a catastrophe happens and not have to worry about your basic luxuries, things like starting a fire, purifying water. I mean, procuring food is, you know, one thing that's of marginal importance, depending on how long you're out there, but eventually does become a big deal. And yeah, protecting yourself from the elements. I think a lot of people, if you know, their basic amenities and comforts went away, they wouldn't last very long.
Yeah.
And I really feel like everyone should have a baseline, at least a few, you know, half a dozen chosen survival skills that can keep them and their families safe or alive if something does happen. And things happen all the time, natural disasters even, that displace thousands of people.
Yeah. What was it, last summer, the summer before, when the heat went crazy in Texas and the AC went off? Like, all these people were dying, and it's like, man, it's heartbreaking, but then it also makes you understand how reliant we are on all of these modern technologies that really haven't been around for that long, like in terms of the overall scheme of things. And so then you start thinking like, gosh, if we had some, what is it, EMP attack or something like that, to where our power went down for a few weeks, like I'm worried it would be chaos because not enough people actually would even have the first idea on how to survive. So having said that, like, what do you think if you could say, okay, guys, like, I know you're not going to go out there and live in the woods, but like, I don't know, maybe the top three skills that people should actually kind of take serious about when it comes to survival, like what would your recommendation be on just maybe a couple of basic ones?
Definitely. Firstly, shelter, because there are a variety of shelters that you can make that require no fire, that can keep you and your loved ones safe and alive if anything happens during really intense weather. Another great one would be basic first aid. Very few people know how to, you know, for example, stop an arterial bleed. So having some really basic, just first aid equipment that you have around, like a little pack in your car, for example. Me and my partner both have sort of a, you know, emergency like triage kit in the car to treat hemorrhaging or, you know, massive bleeding, things like that, to set broken bones. Just some basics like just Benadryl in case you get stung by something, or if you're having some sort of histamine reaction, things like that can save your life. You know, if you're having a sort of an anaphylactic reaction to some sort of plant or animal that you haven't encountered before. So basic first aid is huge. Starting a fire is a big one. And people get really caught up on being able to start the, you know, the hand drill fire, which is just,
those are brutal. Tough, I mean, man. We were trying to do that. Those are tough.
Yeah, you guys saw, I mean, up way up at elevation where the only trees that you have to choose from are pine on pine, sometimes that's not a reliable option. I mean, we had multiple guys up there on the mountain trying to spin a coal, and we could get it all the way to where it would just ignite and then it would just go out. So what are you going to do in that situation? But I mean, for example, a Bic lighter has whatever they advertise, 1,001-second flames. So just having a Bic lighter always on your person, one in your pocket, one in your vehicle, that could save your life. Knowing how to use a ferro rod, which you guys learned, you know, during the survival course at the Mastermind, is another great option because they last for years, totally weatherproof, very small, easy to carry. So fire is great. And then definitely water purification, because if you don't know how to get clean water or make unsatisfactory water clean, you are going to be in big trouble. because water has tons of pathogens and bacteria, and they can incapacitate you very quickly. I mean, sometimes within hours of ingesting them, but definitely within a couple of days of ingesting contaminated water, you could be in a situation where you may have diarrhea so bad that you can actually die from dehydration. Mm-hmm. And there's no stopping it once that, you know, parasite is inside of your body without some sort of medical treatment. So treating water is huge. And as you guys learned, there are a variety of different methods depending on how much time you have, from boiling to simple chem tabs, which are easy to have and great for your first aid kit for your vehicles. Those are probably the big ones that I can think of right now: shelter, fire, water, and basic first aid. And these things are easy to learn. Over a year, just dedicating a little bit of time here and there, you'll have all of those things pretty well mastered.
Well, one of the things that I realized when we were out there and you were kind of talking about some of these things is, I mean, I know how to do most of those things, but it made me realize, like, okay, maybe just dedicate a little bit of time here and there to get a little bit better. And I honestly didn't know how many different pretty easy ways there are to purify water. You just got to have a little bit of preparation, right? Like, I think most people probably know to boil water, but like you said, if you can't start a fire, right? If you're in a bad spot, and a lot of where we are around here in this area, you know, there's still snow at the top of some of these mountains, right? And so finding something dry to start a fire with might be really, really hard. But those tablets, they make those cool water bottles like you had that basically you just push down on it and it filters itself. So there's so many easy ways of actually being able to get clean water. You just have to literally like prepare a little bit. And that was an eye opener for me. And I think that even just talking about it right now, hopefully when someone goes hunting this fall, they'll be like, hey, like I could get one of those cool water bottles that filter, or I could get a couple of those tablets that you talked about just to make sure if something happened, I can go scoop some lake water and drink it and be completely fine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I like to have several different water purification methods. Like you said, you might not always be able to start a fire, whether that's that you don't know how to start a fire, you've misplaced your fire starting equipment, or maybe it's a situation where there's, you know, some hostility, lots of displaced people, and it would not be safe for you to start a fire to like give away your position at night or something. So having backups is great. I mean, they make the Life Straw, you know, that's a very simple, just long straw that you can draw directly out of contaminated water sources. And then the Grail GeoPress is the bottle that I use. All very affordable, easy to acquire, definitely worth having around.
Yeah. Yeah. So with the fire stuff, I think I texted you a picture of it, but it was pretty cool. So my son was away at a Bible camp thing, but my daughters and me, my two 4-year-olds, and then my 12-year-old, we were out there with the ferro rod, getting that thing rocking and rolling. We got the fire going. So that was pretty cool being able to pass that along to them. They've been having some fun with that since.
Yeah. Appreciate you sending me that picture. Yeah, that was awesome to see your family giving it a try.
Yeah. It was interesting, you know, and you get the little ones there trying to get it and, you know, and I'm like, you know, you got to do it this way, but they had fun with it. So when it comes then to some of the bow side of things, because I know a lot of people who are like, yeah, you know, bows are kind of cool, like, you know, maybe more primitive bows, but I use a compound bow. I use all this. I mean, you know how it is now with archery. Like once Joe Rogan kind of started talking about it, every dude out there has gone and gotten a bow and started bow hunting and thousands of dollars worth of equipment in order to set their bows up. But you actually hunt with your longbow, right?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
Yep. And so obviously the range is a lot shorter, but what's a hunt like if you're using more of an actual primitive style bow, like just to kind of take people through that, because I think a lot of people, you know, they don't understand maybe that you can actually use those types of bows to hunt and they're actually really fun to shoot.
Yeah. I don't know where the disconnect happened with, you know, thinking that the only piece of effective equipment are these very mechanical, very fast, modern pieces of equipment. Like the primitive longbow has been around for tens of thousands of years and it's provided for us up until this point. I mean, people wouldn't exist if it had not been implemented successfully. So the idea that these are somehow toys or that, you know, they're ineffective is very strange to me, because a well-made primitive bow, I mean, even anything above 50 pounds draw weight, if it's crafted in an efficient design that shoots well, you know, and you've got everything on point with your arrows being tuned properly, a 50-pound wooden self bow made from a stick will pass an arrow clean through an elk like it's not even there. So I'm not really sure where the idea that, you know, that they're ineffective came from. But just because they're primitive doesn't have to mean that they're crude. I mean, the bows that I'm making, the bows that some of, you know, most of the bowyers out there that are full-time professionals are making are, I mean, we put a ton of time into design and performance and making these things as fast and as powerful as possible. So really it's, like you said, the distances are a lot closer, and that's just because you don't have any sighting mechanism whatsoever. It's all instinctive. So the further back you get, you know, the more variables there are as far as wind and twigs, and just your every little adjustment that you make with your body position is going to throw that arrow off a little bit more. So distances are typically closer. An archer that trains hard and wants to be effective at longer ranges within a reasonable amount of time could be lethal out to 25 yards. You have to train very dedicated daily practice to become effective out to say 40 yards, which is not a difficult compound shot with sights and pins and a peep sight. But yeah, I really typically prefer high percentage shots inside of 20 yards, which is not hard to do.
Yep.
Because really what primitive archery forces you to do is kind of draw into more of a woodsmanship practice. You're not going to have the option to kill an animal that's say 50, 60 yards away, where that animal has no idea of your presence, or, you know, there's really no chance of them seeing you as long as you're in a decent position. But when you're hunting with a primitive bow, you've got to get really close to animals. Like I said, preferably inside of 20 yards. So there are hunters out there who are very effective spot and stalkers. Our timber around here doesn't really lend to spot and stalk all that well because it's very thick, very dense, and the deer are so keen that you'd be hard pressed to get close to them with a stalk. But my preferred method is to stalk into a well-worn trail that I know has traffic just from watching the animals throughout the year and set up an ambush. And I mean, it's not uncommon to have a shot inside of even 10 yards. Mm-hmm. Which is important to know because a lot of people, they think they got to train from far away with their primitive bows and they'll miss the 6 to 10 yard shots on a big game animal. So it's also important to practice up close because once you get used to, you know, stalking and setting up ambushes, you'd be amazed how close you get to animals and how often you get incredibly close.
Well, and how cool it is when you do get that close. You know, I mean, it's an experience that most people that, because up until I even got into regular archery, I never experienced really getting, I mean, there's been times where I've hiked and jumped animals before and been super close to them. But, you know, when you have a bull coming in and they're that close and they're just going nuts bugling, there is nothing cooler on this planet than that sound and that like adrenaline. And it is really like that primal sense is just like everything in your body is firing. So I think it's awesome. And one of the things, and I know that maybe this will piss some people off, but one of the things that I've struggled with is the fact of people wanting to take such long shots, not just with their compound bows, but with these long range rifles now. Right. And one of my good friends, Brian Morgan, he trains people on mostly military units on how to shoot long range. But what I've seen and what I've noticed with some of our land is over the past few years, since some of these things have gotten more popular, there's more wounded animals, it seems like, than what there used to be, because people are trying to take these freaking 1200 yard shots because they've got all this gear. And like, that's just a really hard shot. Like, I don't care how good you are, how much you practice. There's just, like you said, around here, there's so many different wind variables and everything else. When you're trying to take an 80-yard shot on an elk with a compound bow, I mean, you know how it is. One little twig can completely derail that shot. And it's almost made it kind of like easier to take these long, very low percentage shots. And that's bothered me a little bit because we actually had a couple of years ago a nice 5-point bull elk that was wounded really bad. And I know it was from a long range shot because it would have had to have been to shoot where it was. And it ended up basically stumbling down onto some of our property and just laying there and suffering. Right. And I hate to see stuff like that too. I would rather like work a little harder, get a little closer, take a higher percentage shot. But it seems like as the equipment gets better, people are just taking longer and longer pokes at these.
I agree. And I mean, it's impressive to be able to take these long range shots. Like, kudos to anybody that can make a high percentage lethal shot from 80 yards away. But I personally don't see the point either. For example, I train with the longbow hard, and I train every day like a dedicated practice in the evening. So I know for certain I can hit the breadbasket on a white-tailed deer from 40 yards away, but I would never take that shot in the woods. Mm-hmm. Just because to me, from 40 yards away, when I see the deer, I can think, okay, this is not a bag target, and that is a very low percentage shot. There's, like you said, twigs and grass and just visual sort of, you know, distractions everywhere. Yep. The animal may be moving or be unpredictable, and 40 yards, even in just a few seconds in flight path, it can make a difference as well. I mean, one step forward on that animal and you just went from lungs to guts. So I think really for me, it's just a personal challenge to get as close as I can. Mm-hmm. And if I, and just letting those animals walk and kind of using that as my excuse to observe, sort of study animal behavior, have cool encounters with animals, and sort of just, I don't know, have a good experience in the woods without actually having to kill anything. The kill will happen. I think people, they rush. They think, oh my gosh, 80 yards away, that might be my last chance. It's a huge bull. But if they just put in the time and spend the time in the woods, they'll have a lot more encounters and probably one that's more ethical.
Yep.
And as far as like the 1200 yard rifle shots, I don't think that's reasonable at all. Yeah. I mean, I do a little bit of shooting with long range rifles, and I would never shoot an animal from more than, I don't know, 150 yards away, even though I know for certain I could hit one at 600 yards. It's just not an option. I don't feel like it's ethical. And I think people have different sort of ethics meters, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I know there's people who are really, really good at it, but there's also a part of it, kind of like you said, almost like the woodsmanship of it, to where, I don't know, it's like, man, I'm not trying to shoot something from 1,000 yards away. Like I want to hunt. I want to get close to it. I want to observe it, like you said. And maybe it's just getting older. Maybe I'm getting softer in my old age. I don't know. But you know what I mean? It's like, I want to make sure it's going to be one shot, one kill. I want to make sure that it's done as ethical as possible. And I want to have like the experience behind it. And I've gotten more like you, because when I was younger, I think I used to be more impatient, to where it was like, oh, I just got to get something, blah, blah, blah. And now it's, you know, I'll go up and go hunting and be like, if I don't get anything, it's just as good if I do, right? Like, as long as I'm out, like around, you know, obviously you want to see some game, or else it gets kind of frustrating sometimes, but even still, it's still fun just to get out, get in the woods, connect. And that was kind of going to be where I wanted to go next, which is just from like a mental health standpoint. I feel like too many of us don't actually get outside. We don't disconnect. Obviously, with you doing the primitive stuff that you do and the workshops and everything else, like, I don't know if you wouldn't mind just maybe talking about, like, how do you feel like it impacts your mental health being outdoors and shooting primitive weapons and building shelters and doing all the stuff that you do, versus maybe some of us that get stuck in the rat race of sitting in traffic and always on concrete sidewalks. Like, how do you feel like maybe that's impacting our mental health, or maybe even just honestly our overall toughness as a society?
I think, man, that's a broad question. I could go a lot of different directions with it, but what it really comes down to for me, as far as mental health, is just slowing down. Like that's one thing that the alone experience, you know, really taught me, as probably my most valuable takeaway, was just how slow and patient and even keel nature is. And we come back to these frantic lives where there's just cars zooming around. And like, if the TV's not on, the radio's not on, you know, you're working full time in a cubicle with artificial light. You're coming home, sitting in front of a screen with artificial light. You don't wake up with the sunrise. You don't go to bed with the moon. So circadian rhythms are all messed up. And this whole time we're just addicted to busyness. And if we haven't packed our schedules full of enough stuff to do, we can fill every single minute in between those gaps where we could have some time to slow down and disconnect and kind of check in with ourselves, just scrolling mindlessly on social media or shopping online, or you know, choose your digital drug of choice. But really for me, it just comes down to slowing down and just looking. I mean, when we went up to the top of the mountains, we did the 10 minutes of awesome meditation.
That was one of my favorite things. I came back and I told my wife about it. I was like, and it seems so like simple, but if you wouldn't mind like telling everybody what this is, because I would highly encourage all of you to do this, because it was more profound than what maybe it'll even sound, but it's so freaking cool.
Yeah. It's just a little practice that I kind of came up with for myself. And I've enjoyed sharing it with anybody that kind of comes into any one of my primitive skills clinics, or, you know, if we're out in the woods, either on a hunt or, just on a stump shoot, you know, roving with a primitive bow. But I call it the 10 minutes of awesome. And it's just an open eyed silent meditation where you arrive at your beautiful destination, whether you've just hiked all day up to the top of a ridge, you know, with your pack, or up to the top of a, you know, a mountain that you're going to set up base camp at, whatever it may be. Maybe you just got to the halfway point of a beautiful hike that you're on with your friends. Just sit down for 10 minutes. Don't say a word. Don't focus on your breath. Don't focus on anything, and just observe nature and just soak it all in, everything from the micro to the macro, kind of like Taylor Morgan said while we were up there, like look up at the clouds and just appreciate how much you miss out on. I feel like it's a survival mechanism that we've developed for living in these congested cities surrounded by people and commotion, to just tune out our entire environment. So if you can just sit back silently and look up and actually look at the things that you don't see on a regular basis, like the clouds, or the trees moving in the wind, or the sound of the water, just, it's a sensory appreciation exercise. Feel the wind on your skin, kind of reconnect to Mother Earth. And then as you, you know, look around at the soil, maybe notice all the worms and the ants and everything that have their own ecosystem that's happening all around us all the time. And we're so busy to even tune in to this giant organism that, I mean, created us and is us. We're so detached. And I think the ancient cultures were very much more attached to just sort of the divinity in all things. And so 10 minutes of awesome is just a sensory appreciation experience where you try to reconnect to all of the things that you're supposed to be a part of. And I think it's fantastic for mental health and a fantastic way to just kind of sit back and appreciate this new location, that the beautiful untouched scenery that is, you know, becoming fewer and fewer, and kind of settling yourself out of that rushed sort of state of mind and into the even keel pace, slow pace of nature before you carry on with your daily activities.
Well, what was so cool, like what I kind of noticed myself doing, is at first you're like, okay, we're going to sit here for 10 minutes and not say anything. And then you start noticing things that you would have never noticed had, because we were at this really cool lake way up high. I think it was like 9,000 feet elevation, whatever it was. And then like, just by sitting there just for 10 minutes, you're like, huh. And then I kind of found myself getting curious about stuff and be like, huh, I wonder how long this ice is going to be on this lake. And then you're like looking at the ice, and then you're like looking at the clouds, and you're looking in the sand, and you're looking. And before you know it, it's like, okay, I kind of feel like I had an opportunity to explore this area with my eyes, to where had we not done something like that, we probably would have came up. We probably would have noticed what was right in front of us, which was like the water, the fireplace, whatever. Probably would have got busy trying to start a fire or whatever else we were doing, and wouldn't have actually appreciated it. And so that's something that I was telling myself when I left, I want to do that more often, because we have so many beautiful places around here and we're so blessed to be able to live here. But sometimes you never take the 10 minutes of awesomeness, because you're like, I just got to get up here. And then I just, you know, I have to move this and I have to go here, and you never actually appreciate it. And sometimes it's like, it's so stupid. We have all this amazing stuff and we never appreciate it. Right. And one time, just like a quick story. So we went through a pretty crazy story. Everyone who listens to the podcast knows that when we first moved back and we bought out my stepmom, and kind of this big, long, huge, horrible story for the most part, we're remodeling the house. I did something similar to that without knowing what it was. So I was actually up deer hunting. It was in October, maybe early November, and it had just been chaos. Like we had a wall basically fall down when I tried to remove a window, and we were literally going nonstop trying to get the place like kind of wrapped up before wintertime comes. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to force myself just to go up on the mountain and go hunt. Like, probably won't kill anything. I just have to go do it. And I remember sitting, I was on this ridge, and I think I might've even told the story here before, but I sat down on this ridge and it's like, I'm not even really looking for a game. I'm just going to sit here for a few minutes and just breathe. And it was the most like crystal clear day, or just like crisp day. And then it started snowing on me, but it was just like these gentle snowflakes. And yes, I know you're all probably calling me a touchy-feely hippie right now, but it was like the most cool thing ever. I was just sitting there on this ridge overlooking all this beautiful scenery with the snow just like gently falling down on me. And it was just like, just those probably, it was probably 10 minutes, 15 minutes that I sat there. And it just gave me perspective to be like, this is, it's all worth it. Like all the stuff with the house and the buyout and the moving and like all this craziness, like those 10 minutes right then and there made all of it worth it to me. But if I would have never settled down and I would have just stayed in myself, feeling sorry for myself, all the bad stuff, that never would have happened. And so again, like when you did that up there, it was like a good reminder, because I remember that moment, like 4 years later, I remember that exact moment sitting there. And it was just like 10 minutes of awesomeness before I knew that that's what it was called. So that was super cool to have you do that and kind of bring us, you know, for me at least, bring me full circle for the last couple of years.
Yeah, we never give ourselves any opportunities just to check in. You can call it meditation. You can call it prayer. You can call it self-reflection. But I mean, all of the greatest minds in history had some practice of, you know, walking or sitting silently in nature. And they said that all of their greatest problems were solved there. All the answers came to them. For me personally, like that is the God experience, just to sit there and listen. And you don't even know, there's no audible voice or anything. You're just receiving these downloads that are kind of helping you make sense of things, because you're actually listening to yourself. You're listening to your intuition. Yeah. And I think it's something that everybody should do. 10 minutes a day. It's not, you see these guys out here, you know, preaching like hour of meditation every day or whatever. And that's all fine if that works for you. But for me, 10 minutes a day or 10 minutes every time I go to a new location is enough to just really set the tone.
You know, what's so funny is, so I'm launching kind of this, it's called the Primal Reset, and it'll come out probably shortly after this episode comes out. But that's one of the things that we'll be doing through part of the challenge is literally 10 minutes a day of silence. There's no music, no guided meditation. It's just sit there in quiet for 10 minutes. And people will be like, oh, that'll seem simple. But it's crazy how hard it can be to make yourself just do that. Once you start doing it, I think it's great. But like just planning 10 minutes of your day, maybe if it's crazy to do nothing, people are like, that seems so unproductive. The funny thing to me, though, that I know is that you will probably get more figured out in those 10 minutes of your day than the entire rest of your day. Because you'll actually be able to hear yourself think. You'll, like you said, I do believe you do get answers, you know, from God, from just yourself being able to hear yourself. And it's amazing, like how important it's weird to me that we're at a point in our society, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody, to where it's like, literally, dude, just sit for 10 minutes and just be quiet. Because like so much of our human evolution, you know, was quiet, like without distractions, I'm sure, or at least the types that we have now, but just how powerful it is. So that's cool. One thing too, I know we're kind of starting to get toward the end here. Just from a toughness standpoint, and we kind of talked about this, and maybe even from a man standpoint, you see these studies that show like testosterone levels are dropping. And I'm sure there's a number of different reasons for that. But I am a big believer that I feel like there's something innate in us that wants to be out exploring and adventuring. Like there's something. And I can't really speak for women on this, but I think as men, there's something in us that wants to explore, and we want to, you know, be adventurous and things like that. Do you think, and I'm this is total speculation, but you've just been in the woods so much. Do you think that maybe some of these issues, maybe that we're having with testosterone levels dropping, maybe some of these, let's call them very feminized men, like, do you think maybe they just need to get out in the woods and like do some man shit sometimes? Like what are your thoughts around that?
I think it's a very complex problem, you know, because we're experienced all these plastics now, which is sort of a new thing. These endocrine disruptors in both our diets and our environment. So it's hard to tell how much that plays a role. It's hard to tell how much sort of societal indoctrination plays a role. I mean, I've got some, you know, throughout my extended family, some younger kids in the late teens, early 20s who are just really just brainwashed into believing that anything that is masculine at all is toxic masculinity. They can't make any sort of differentiation between the sacred masculine or the divine masculine energy that we need, obviously, as you know, the balance of all things with the sacred masculine and sacred feminine. But they believe that anything on the masculine spectrum is toxic.
Where does that come? Do you think that's through schooling? Do you think it's through like watching stuff? I mean, it's almost like it's a combination or a convergence of everything from political stuff to what you watch on TV to, you know, what you're taught in school, but it doesn't it seem like this is all expedited so much in like the last 10 years, even?
I think it probably has a lot more to do with peer pressure. If you think about sort of what it was like to be a teenager and where your greatest influences were, it was fitting in with your group. Mm-hmm. So you've got, you know, I mean, there is definitely a certain amount of indoctrination happening with the system. But at the same time, you know, as soon as one person jumps on the bandwagon, or, you know, some popular kids jump on the bandwagon, now all there's this pressure in the peer group to sort of conform. And if you don't conform, you're ostracized from the group, which, you know, would be a hard way for any teenager to experience their life. So part indoctrination, part peer pressure. But also, I think that really the biggest thing is probably a lack of purpose, a lack of doing hard things. It doesn't necessarily have to be in nature, but I mean, nature is a great equalizer of all men. If you want to do something hard, go out into the wilderness and pick a peak and without a trail and just say, I'm climbing up to the top of that peak, and go bushwhacking and see if that doesn't kick your butt. Yeah. So I think experience to any sort of hardship at all. You know, the saying that, you know, good times make soft men make hard times, yada, yada. Yep. But, I mean, right now we're living in a time of complete abundance. There's absolutely no reason for anyone to feel any discomfort. There's no reason for anyone to stay strong, or either in body or mind, to, you know, defend themselves from an invading enemy. So we're losing some of these traditional masculine values. They're being replaced by indoctrination with an agenda, which is a bigger problem than I could ever solve. But also, these kids are kind of growing up without a purpose. I feel like over the last couple of generations, really, we've started to see how faulty the system was that we developed during the Industrial Revolution to, you know, put everyone in the cracker box in a little desk and turn them into factory workers. We've been doing that for a long time, and we're starting to see sort of the backlash of this, where you maybe have a kid who doesn't need to be sitting in school, or you know, you can homeschool your children and really sort of steer them towards their passions. It's like areas that they're very purposes that they feel strongly drawn to, so that they feel, you know, valuable to society by doing something that they love and doing it well, and being valued in society for doing the thing that they love well. So I don't know, man, there's a lot that plays into it, but I mean, really quick to tie it back into survival stuff. You mentioned the Texas thing where, you know, the electricity goes out and people just die from getting too hot. Yeah. So I mean, one great thing for survival, both for males, for men and women, is voluntary exposure to hardships, voluntary exposure to extreme heat. Go out and do a workout on the 100-degree day. Keep it reasonable. You know, if you're not in shape, don't go to the point of headaches and heat exhaustion and heat stroke, but go out and actually, I don't know, go for a walk in the middle of the afternoon on a 100-degree day with 80% humidity. Or go out in the middle of wintertime and walk around in your bare feet for a little while, or lay down in the snow. Just voluntary exposure to hardships, because if you don't have sort of a baseline to base, you know, your limits on, you get in a situation where you get stranded, your vehicle breaks down in the desert or in high altitude in the late season, and there's snow on the ground, and you've never experienced anything but 75 degrees and mild air inside of your home, and the only heat that you've ever experienced is walking from your home to your air-conditioned car and driving, you know, to your parking spot and walking from your car to your air-conditioned office. You're gonna have a rough time when you finally get exposed to some hardships.
Well, and sometimes you see some of these people that freak out over political decisions, and whether you agree or disagree with some of them, I'm always like, that just reminds me of like a spoiled brat that's always gotten their way and everything has been easy. You know what I mean? It's like, go get in a cold tub for the love of God and experience some hardship before you go out there and, you know, melt down over something. I don't know. Cause I'm the same way. And then sometimes I reflect on it, and it's just like, how fortunate are we that we actually have to go and create hard things to do? You know what I mean? Like, inherently life is going to throw us some tough things, you know, like when I lost my dad was hard. But like on a day-to-day basis for most of us, it is pretty damn easy. And it really drives the point home that we live in a pretty awesome place when It's like we're doing things to make our life uncomfortable so we can handle those things, right? Like how fortunate are we to be like, I'm going to go get in a cold tub to make myself uncomfortable, because the rest of my day, even though it might be a little stressful here and there, it's pretty damn easy. Like I'm not searching for food. I'm not worried about freezing to death today. You know what I mean? It is pretty good problem to have that we're actually trying to make things more difficult.
I agree completely. We're very blessed.
Yeah.
And we're very blessed and very lacking in appreciation.
Yep.
Just the simple things. The fact that you can walk to your sink and flip the tap and clean water comes out. Yeah. I mean, people should be on their knees thanking above every day.
Yeah.
But instead we've made it so easy that, you know, even the slightest inconvenience can send people into an outrage.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's wild. So it was funny too when you were talking about that, because now, like, I have the automatic starter in my pickup, and I think I've used it like twice, because I almost feel guilty. It's like, really, man? Like, you have to have your truck started and heated up by the time you get in it. I know it's more comfortable, but come on, can you not deal with the 3 minutes that it takes for you to drive down the road far enough for your truck to get warm as I'm turning on my heated steering wheel, just sitting there shaking my head, being like, I'm getting soft. I got to go home and do something now. I got to go kick my ass in a workout or something.
But yeah,
I mean, the heating steering wheel is nice. I mean, you got to admit that, right?
Definitely.
Oh, awesome.
I think there's nothing wrong with enjoying the comforts. Appreciate them, but also make yourself resilient.
Yeah.
Anti-fragile. You know, you don't want to be somebody who, I don't know, can't hardly stand to be outside on a 50 degree day without a jacket on, you know, shivering and just totally incapacitated. So just,
yeah,
I don't know. I like to make myself hard to kill.
That's so funny. I was literally just going to say that. I was like, do whatever you can to make yourself hard to kill, if nothing else.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, don't be the first one to go down easy. If nothing else, like, at least prepare for that. So on the podcast, I know we got to wrap it up here. I want to make sure we respect your time. You know, I talk a lot about liberation, just mindset, seeing different points of view, being able to kind of have growth, hopefully, lifestyle, kind of living the way we live. Obviously, you've been able to do that. It's so cool that you've been able to step into your passion the way that you have. You've been able to help so many people. And then lastly is the legacy side of it. Kind of the way that, I guess, since we are in a point where we can redefine meanings of words, I kind of look at legacy as like what you want to create, maybe bigger than yourself. So, you know, let's say you go through all this, you've taught all these people, all these awesome survival skills, you've built the bows, you've impacted so many people's lives. You've got such an awesome, you know, following on Instagram and what you're doing there. We'll get into that in a second. But I don't know, like when you get to the end and you're looking back, Corey, what do you feel like you want the legacy that you leave behind to be?
I don't think I have much of a desire to leave behind a material legacy. For example, as far as, you know, the bow making business, maybe I'll have children one day that I can raise up who have the same passion, but really right now the business is built around me. So when I go, the business goes, or when I decide to stop making, the business goes. But really, I think the legacy that I would like to leave is just leading a life by example, having values in place, just through my quality of work, my dedication to my craft, trying to live as balanced and well-rounded of a lifestyle as I possibly can, and just leading my future children by example, leading my my romantic relationship by example, and leading other men and my peers by example, just through making good decisions on my end. Because at the end of the day, I think people get really caught up in these huge issues that are affecting the entire world, and they don't want to take responsibility for themselves and understand that all of these problems that are happening are a sickness of humanity. And it starts with you. It starts with you living by example. It starts with you getting your life in order. And it starts with you making the small changes toward the right direction so that you can get your path in life on track. And if we all take personal responsibility, then together we uplift the tide of humanity. So for me personally, my legacy is just living by example and trying to be a strong man for everybody I come in contact with.
I love it. Because it does. It's so easy to get caught up in some of these big issues. But at the end of the day, if we just take responsibility for ourselves and our families, all the rest of this stuff is going to work itself out.
It'll lose its power. Yeah. If we just fix ourselves. We give it so much power when we focus on all these things that we can't control.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, they control us. And everybody knows that. The media knows that. The government knows that. If they can divert your attention away from yourself and your family and your purpose, I mean, they win.
Yep. Yep. Can't let them win. Can't let them win. So you guys have got to check out Corey. First off, on Instagram. Sorry, I'm trying not to laugh because of your TikTok story. That. So you got to tell them what happened when you got on TikTok for like 5 minutes.
There was some pressure for me to get on TikTok. People were saying, hey, just do some shooting on there. You know, it's the platform's really taken off. This was maybe a year or two ago when TikTok, you know, wasn't quite as big as it is now. And I was like, whatever, I guess I'll try to make a TikTok video. So I filmed a quick, just, I don't know, 30-second video of me in the yard. And if anyone ever played Skyrim back in the day, it was just an RPG video game that had a lot to do with archery. And one of the best paths that you could take in this old video game was to become a legendary archer. So I made a video of me in the yard, moving quickly back and forth, also sort of increasing the distance while walking side to side, and shooting the target with rapid fire arrows at the same time. And the caption said, when a legendary archer in Skyrim is draining your health bar. And then I flipped the camera around and all the arrows were stacked into, you know, a little 6-inch group. And within, I think, overnight, that video had like 3.5 million views. And my profile had like, I don't even know, 14,000 followers or some crazy number, just it appeared overnight. And I said, well, whatever this is, not interested. And I deleted the app and never looked back.
Oh, it's so funny. Because when you were telling that story, it's just so like, I have friends of mine who are trying to be like TikTok influencers or people that I know that are literally doing everything. They're posting all this crazy content. You throw up one video, you do what most people can never accomplish in their entire TikTok career. And then you're like, nope, I'm out. That was too much.
I think I have a very finite span of attention for social media or the phone in general. I mean, all of my family and friends know this. I always joke with them, like, please allow 3 to 5 business days for a response. Like, I don't want really to be involved in screens. I try to keep my relationship as detached as possible. Obviously, I fall into the same traps as everybody else, late night scrolling, you know, whatever it may be, but I really try to be intentional. And Instagram already sort of, I really can't hardly be bothered with posting on there. It's just, I just want to do my job. I don't want to have to think about, you know, creating content and doing all this. So I do a very so-so job at best on Instagram. And that takes up enough of my attention, just responding to messages on there, you know, directing people to my website on there and contributing to that platform. I don't need 2 or 3 or 4 platforms to contribute to. Yeah. I don't feel like they would add enough value to my life to, you know, incorporate them.
Yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it. Well, having said that, he is being humble because he's got some awesome stuff on his Instagram page. You guys got to go check him out. It's at organic.archer. So you guys got to check him out. You can also search his name, Corey Hawk, Corey, on Corey and then Hawk. You guys can find him there. Go follow him. Give him some love there. Also, you can go to organicarchery.com. I know you're filled up through the whole year though with your custom builds.
I have my custom books open right now.
Your workshops. I mean, your custom workshop. Okay.
Yep.
You got to raise the prices, man. That's too far out. You got to make that a little more expensive. But no. So yeah, check out organicarchery.com. I'm going to have Corey build me a bow and you guys should too. So make sure you hit him up. Thanks again, Corey. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Derek. It's been great talking to you again, man. Looking forward to seeing you again sometime soon.
Sounds good.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content, then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show.
I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.